And hopefully the Blue Jays can get things going and put together a September, as it were, to remember. They beat the Yankees 4-3. They close out this homestand 4-5, but with two straight wins against the New York Yankees, and they're going to need a September like they had a May in order to make it meaningful. But they've done it before. 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance 1-888-666-0590. Right now, the Blue Jays are 5.5 games behind the second wild card in the American League that is shared by Seattle and one of Detroit or Kansas City. Right now, Detroit is trailing the Chicago White Sox 5-0 as they play in the bottom of the fifth inning. The Mariners get started with the Washington Nationals in about 20 minutes. Tanner Roark and Asashi Iwakuma. And the Kansas City Royals are on Sunday Night Baseball on most of these Sportsnet Radio Network stations. They will be home to the Cleveland Indians with Danny Duffy, 8-11, against TJ House, who is 2-3. The Baltimore Orioles, 10 games up on the Blue Jays in the AL East, are currently leading the Minnesota Twins 11-2. In the top of the seventh, so it appears as though that deficit in the AL East is going to remain at 10.5. The Blue Jays have 6 games left with the Orioles. They need not only to win all 6 of those games, but they also need a pretty epic Baltimore collapse in order to win the American League East. Phone lines are open. It is Blue Jays talk at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance 1-888-666-0590. The Blue Jays get up off the mat. Once again, down 3-0 with 2 out in the sixth, having been 2 hit to that point and looking absolutely dead offensively. And they beat the New York Yankees 4-3. Let's kick off our Blue Jays talk with George in London. George is listening on our flagship Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. It's great to be on. Thanks for having me on first. Basically, this was a great game. I agree with you guys about how it was a good team win. Everybody contributed. So I don't really want to get too negative. I just kind of have a bone to pick with my fellow Blue Jay fans. And I don't know if you agree with me, because I usually agree with you about almost everything. So I'm curious if you agree with me about this. But I agree. Okay, the first at-bat that Jeter had, okay, you give him a big, nice standing ovation because, you know, all the years he's played. And, you know, everybody knows what he's done. But top of the ninth inning, we're down by one run. We got a pinch runner, I think, first or second base. I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly. But anyway.
Runner on third.
On third, exactly. Oh, thank you. So Derek Jeter right there, if he would have got a hit, that would have tied the game up. So I don't understand these fans who get on their feet, the Blue Jay fans. I see the Yankee fans, but the Blue Jay fans that are on their feet giving a standing ovation to try to get him to get a hit so that we can lose the game. I mean, aren't we trying to, like, get back into this race, or are we trying to just give them all mushy about Derek Jeter? That's the only thing I didn't like. Other than that, I think it was really great to see the bats getting the 3 home runs, I mean, from the 3 big guys. And I agree with what you said. Maybe, hopefully, they can have a September that's even just close to May, and then we might be okay. But that's my only, bone to pick is with the fans. I don't know if you agree with me, Mike, but I'd love to hear your opinion on that.
Thanks, George. Appreciate it. And you know what? I talked about this Friday night, and I talked about Derek Jeter again yesterday, and I have a feeling we'll talk a little bit more about it today. But for me, if you want to give the guy an ovation, I don't mind if you do it in his final at-bat. And I don't think the people were up cheering because they wanted Derek Jeter to get a hit and tie the game. I think they were up cheering to say thank you for, you know, 20 years in Major League Baseball. And for me, what I loved about that in the ninth inning was that, yeah, they stood up and they cheered for Derek Jeter, but they cheered even louder when Derek Jeter hit that little nothing humpback liner to second base to end the game, and the Blue Jays won. So that's fine with me.
Okay, you know what, Mike, that makes a lot of sense, too. I just thought that it's a perception thing. Like, I don't know if they would do that in the other baseball cities. I haven't really been to other stadiums, but I don't know if it's just a Toronto thing or not. But, I mean, I just can't see that happening anywhere else. And sometimes that gives a guy a boost, you know, hearing the crowd cheering. Sometimes that can give him a boost. And what if he did happen to get a home run? Then people would say, oh, it's because the fans got him, you know, going, maybe. Like, I just think it looked bad, that's all. But I do agree with what you said, that they did cheer louder when he got out. So, yeah, you're right about that, Mike.
All right, thank you, sir. Appreciate the call. If cheering for a guy made him hit home runs, I think we would see a lot more cheering for a lot more people a lot more often. But I get what you think about, you know, the optics and all of that stuff. And I don't love the idea, and I've said it many times this weekend, I don't love the idea of cheering an opposing player to that extent. But you knew it was going to be his last at-bat. At least you hoped it was. And again, louder cheering when he got out. That makes me happy. That makes me happy. And yes, it is something that's gone on in every other city in the major leagues when Derek Jeter has made his final appearance. They've been going nuts for him. Adam in Toronto. Adam, you're on Blue Jays Talk.
Thanks for taking my call, Mike. I'm just curious where you think Jeter ranks among middle infielders since he entered the league. And I also just want to know your favorite Jeter moment since he came in the league. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Wow. I don't know if I have a favorite Jeter moment. You know, I'm not a Yankee fan. I really don't like the New York Yankees. So I haven't ever cheered for Derek Jeter. Favorite moment. I mean, hitting a home run in November was pretty cool, I have to say. Especially when you look at 2001 and what happened in 9/11 and baseball coming back and the tattered flag from the World Trade Center going to the World Series games and how much that meant to the city of New York and really to all of us across North America in the wake of, I mean, if you can remember, and it's very difficult to remember how we were feeling 13 years ago in the wake of September 11, 2001, and to have the season pushed back and to have Derek Jeter step up and hit a home run in November, I think was probably my favorite memory of him for his career. Where does he stand among middle infielders? That's awfully tough. I mean, he's done it. He's managed to stay at shortstop for 20 years, whether he's been a great defender there or not. He's certainly not among the best defensive shortstops, not even in the conversation for the best defensive shortstops over his tenure. And in his time in the league, there have been more productive offensive shortstops like Alex Rodriguez and Nomar Garciaparra and Hanley Ramirez, even Troy Tulowitzki. And there are a couple more that I'm forgetting. I mean, Derek Jeter to me is a guy who when you need in a big spot, well, forget the big spot. If you need a guy to hit a single, Derek Jeter's a pretty good guy to pick. If you need a guy to draw a walk or get an extra base hit, not so much. And there's a lot to be said for that. You know what? Tony Gwynn was exactly the same. But no, I don't think he's near the top of the list. But I do think he's an easy choice to be in the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. More of your calls coming up after the top of the hour. We'll let the network go. If you're on hold, stay on hold. I promise we'll get to you. Don't hang up, even though I'm going to say goodbye. Blue Jays beat the Yankees 4-3. It's a Honda postgame show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Blue Jays Talk with Mike Wellner should be called Blue Jays Talk with you, because it can't be Blue Jays Talk without you. Call in after the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. The Fan.
The strike one delivery. Breaking ball looped to second base. There's Tolleson. Catch. Ball game, Blue Jays. Three in 8.5 innings to win the series, 2-1. Jeter hit it off the end of the bat. Casey Jansen with his 20th save, and the Blue Jays go 69-67, finish August on a winning note, 9-17, and a much needed victory today.
Sure was a much needed victory today, and we've seen it many times, even in this poor month where the Blue Jays were just awful. And at this, to this point, have given away 8.5 games in the wild card race. They were 3 up on August 1st, and right now they're 5.5 back, pending the outcome of 3 different games today, only one of which is underway, and that's the Detroit Tigers in Chicago against the White Sox. The Tigers, last time I looked, were down 5-0, so I should probably look again, and it's 5-1 right now as they play in the top of the 6th. So if the Blue Jays need Detroit or Kansas City and Seattle to lose to pick up a game in the wild card race and be 5 back. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk. We're taking your calls right up until 5 o'clock Eastern time when Roger Lajoie takes over. And if you're interested in how the Kansas City Royals do, you can listen to their game right here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, the Royals, and the Cleveland Indians, TJ House and Danny Duffy. Sunday Night Baseball starts just after 8 with the pregame show at 7 o'clock. Until then, though, we take your telephone calls. You know the numbers. Talk to Eric Prime. If you call him Rib, then he'll for sure put you on. Otherwise, convince him that you should be on the program, and he'll put you on the program. Then you get to talk to me. And as they say, Bob's your uncle. Art is in Brockville listening on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome to Blue Jays Talk, sir.
Thanks, Mike. Certainly enjoy your show. I listen to it after every game, and I just want to get your view. Certainly the Jays have a slim opportunity, as do other teams, to make the playoffs, but where do you see their best opportunities? That leapfrog over the other four teams, or hope for perhaps the Baltimore goes on a bit of a skid like the Jays did, although it doesn't look like that's going to happen. Are their chances better in just overtaking the divisional lead, or do you think with all the interdivisional play, just finding that wild card spot? I'll hang up and share your views. Thanks very much.
Okay, it's an interesting question because you would think that the obvious answer would be the wild card because they're 5.5 back in the wild card and 10 back in the division. And about to be 10.5 back in the division again. Baltimore is running roughshod over Minnesota today. But a lot of people get all caught up, and Minnesota's coming back, but they're still down 11-5 in the seventh inning. A lot of people get caught up in how many teams are between the Blue Jays and the wild card spot. And you think, I think a lot of that is thinking in hockey terms, where if you get behind too many teams, you're going to have a hard time picking up ground. And anybody on any given night, but hockey rewards losses. You can lose a hockey game and still move up in the standings. It doesn't happen that way in baseball, so it's easier, which doesn't make it easy by any means. But really what you have to do is just win ball games, and everything else will take care of itself. If you win, then you'll pass by teams one at a time on your way up. The Blue Jays are right now 1.5 back of the Yankees, 2 back of the Indians, 4 back of the Mariners, and 5.5 back of whoever of Detroit and Kansas City is the wild card, because they're both tied right now. So one gets the division, one gets the wild card. So you got to do it methodically, but simply by winning games, you're going to do it. You got to win a crap load of games, but that has to happen anyway when you go into September in the situation the Blue Jays are in, again, 5.5 games back of a playoff spot. You're going to have to win a crap load of games in September. They're 10.5 back of Baltimore. They will be. I'm assuming Baltimore is going to win today. They're up by 6 in the seventh inning. They play Baltimore 6 times. They don't play Detroit or Kansas City or Cleveland. They have 4 more left against the Yankees and 4 more left against the Mariners. You hope they're not in a position where they need to win all of those games. But that's what being 2 games over 500 going into September will do to you as well. I still think it's going to be easier to get the wild card than the division. But neither one of those things is likely, obviously, at this point in the season. Thank you for the phone call. Wayne is in Thornhill. Hey, Wayne.
Hello. Loved your call today. It was a beautiful day for baseball, huh?
It was. Still is. We could go out and play now.
Not today. We got one coming up this week. But I was sitting in the pool today listening to the game on the radio, which I find,
nice.
I think, even better sometimes than watching it on TV because you get to visualize it, and it was just a great day to listen to the ball game.
You should always listen, and even if you want to watch on TV, you should turn off the volume and turn us up for sure.
Well, my concern is, and I've been thinking about this for a while in terms of the way the order is currently built, and then when I watched the Gillick show yesterday, Gillick and, who's his buddy there that's the president now?
Paul Beeston.
Pardon me?
Paul Beeston?
Yeah, Beeston, sorry.
Yeah.
I was watching it again yesterday, and there was a comment in there from Gillick that talked about how they were going to draft Olerud in the fifth inning. And he says to one of the scouts, I think it was Elliot Whale or Wall at the time, and he said, look, he can't throw and he can't run, but I think I might have found the next 400 hitter in baseball. And, you know, when I think about the way this team is constructed, yeah, it was great. They hit 3 homers today, and they win a game. And if you're at the game or listening, everybody's happy. But unless they hit a home run or 2 or 3, they don't win. And, you know, I was around. I'm 49. I watched the World Series games. I watched them from day one. I watched them build. And the way the team is constructed currently is not going to win you a World Series. They got good young pitching coming up, which is great. Some of their best ones, like Osuna, you know, are not even here yet, and there's some good ones coming, and they'll have, I hope, a really good pitching staff, and you know, maybe they'll have some good defense, but they don't have the position players. They don't have the guys that have the averages. Like, Melky is a perfect player for this team and for any team. I hope they can re-sign him, but who knows? He's going to want a lot of money. You know, there's a guy hitting 306 or 307, whatever he's at now, plays really good defense. He gets on base. When the Jays were winning the World Series, yeah, they had a big home run from Carter, and he was a big home run hitter. But from my recollection, you know, you had guys that were getting on base. You had Molitor. I mean, you had number one, two, and three in the league in average.
Yes,
and
you did.
I know the game has changed, and now you've got the seventh-inning specialist and the eighth-inning specialist and the ninth-inning guys. But unless you've got guys that are going to get on base, I mean, Kobe doesn't cut it at 224 hitting 20 home runs. It just doesn't work anymore. I don't think it ever worked, but anyways, that's how do you correct this going forward? Where are these guys in the system that get on base and maybe hit you 10, 12, 15 home runs? We got to get guys on base, and I don't see it. What do you think?
I think you're not looking. I honestly think, you know, that a lot of the things you said were bang on. But you talk about the Blue Jays in 92 and 93 having the top, or in 93 they had the top three hitters in batting average, which they did. Olerud, Alomar, Molitor, all of them, well, Alomar, Molitor, Hall of Famers, and Olerud, one of the best to ever come through here. But Colby Rasmus isn't one of them. Colby Rasmus is in the Kelly Gruber, Manny Lee, Ed Sprague category, Candy Maldonado, Pat Borders, those sorts of things. The Blue Jays right now, with Reyes, Cabrera, Batista, Encarnacion, Lind, that's a top five that's better than WAMCO. I hate to say it because
I know
that's
blasphemy. You might be right, but what happened in the last month? Where did they go?
I have no idea where they went. I really don't. I don't. I honestly don't. I mean, Edwin's had a really hard time coming back from the quad injury. Lind hasn't been himself. Bautista's power was gone until the last 5 days this month. And you know, he's still getting on base. You know, you like guys who get on base. Jose Bautista's a major league leader.
And I don't want to trade him, but, I mean, you know, he'd be one guy that you look at that might not, you might not be able to resign him in a year or two from now.
And 3 years.
Maybe
but
if you get a good crop of position players, I don't know. But I love the guy. I mean, he gets on base, and that's what you need.
Right. You've got Bautista, who's leading the league in on base. You've got Edwin, who ordinarily is an on-base machine and a ton of power. Adam Lind is leading the major leagues in batting average against right-handed pitching. He's a platoon guy, but he's a spectacular platoon guy against the right side of the platoon.
Yep.
Melky, you love. Jose Reyes is hitting 290 with an above-average on base that isn't as good as it should be, but it's still pretty strong. And the Blue Jays, you know, when they were winning world championships, yeah, they had Olerud and Alomar and Molitor and Dave Winfield the year before, but they also had Ed Sprague playing every day with a 310 on base. Pat Borders playing every day with a 285 on base. And the year before that, Manny Lee playing every day and not being able to get on. And Kelly Gruber not being able to get on.
So why do they not win unless they hit a home run or two?
That's
what appears to me over the last little while.
That's not true, though. And I think that you're kind of caught up in how terrible they've been this month. And they're not hitting at all. And so it's easy to say, well, when they don't hit home runs, they don't win. But the home run is a big weapon on this team, and they've got a lot of guys who can hit a lot of home runs. They're second in the major leagues in hitting home runs. And you know who's first? Want to take a guess? Are you still there? They let you go? The Baltimore Orioles, the team they're chasing. And the Blue Jays, pardon me, are third in the major leagues in home runs. They're one behind the Colorado Rockies right now. But the Baltimore Orioles have hit more home runs than any other team in the major leagues. And that's a team the Blue Jays are chasing in the American League East. The home run, I don't know why so many people turn their noses up at the home run. It's a wonderful, wonderful weapon. And when you have guys who can hit them, then that's great. And that helps you win games. And you don't want to diversify your game. I'm not asking Jose Bautista or Edwin Encarnacion to lay down a sacrifice bunt or hit and run or something like that. They're really good at hitting home runs. The bottom of your lineup, I get the criticism of Colby Rasmus, and I have a feeling we're going to be seeing a lot less of Colby Rasmus in September, just like we're going to be seeing a lot less of Juan Francisco in September. Rosters expand before the Blue Jays' next game. Ryan Goins and Anthony Gose will be here, and I have a feeling we're going to see them getting a lot of playing time. But the Blue Jays don't need to I mean, not too reliant on the home run. They've got good hitters who get on base, and they just haven't been able to get anything done this month. It's true. But, again, Jose Bautista leading the league in on-base percentage, that's not because he's hit 29 home runs, right? Edwin Encarnacion, going into today's game, had a 352 on-base percentage. That's not because he's hit 28 home runs. And it's only 4 points less than Melky Cabrera's 356. So they get on. They don't need home runs. They get home runs. They get a lot of them. And that's a good thing. But it's not a home run or bust type offense. There's not a lot of guys on this team who are like Colby Rasmus hitting 220 with a 280 on base with 20 homers. Daryl is in Stony Creek. Daryl, you're up next on Blue Jays Talk.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. Two or three quick comments that I might. First is, as great as yesterday was and today was, or is, I think it's how they won that is the most significant thing for me. Yesterday, they won with their future. Today, they won with guys who should be hitting home runs, and I'm stunned the number of people who don't think that hitting home runs is important. But hitting home runs from the guys who you expect to, you sign them, you pay big bucks to. But also, they won today because they had some role players step up in key situations and won. And I think that the exciting part for me is, as disappointing as August has been, what was important today and yesterday was future wins it yesterday. The guys who should win it do it today. And a combination of that is a little bit of encouragement for September.
I hope so. And I hate to sit here and talk about 2015 and forward when they're still, you know, they're as close going into September as they've been in decades. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. Hutchison and Sanchez combining on a one-hitter gives you a great hope for what's to come in Blue Jays land. And the fact that Bautista and Encarnacion go deep today also gives you a great hope for what's to come, because these guys are still hugely productive major league players. And that's why I don't get why people want to blow it up and start over with the kids. You don't have to, because you still have a very good offense going into next season.
Yeah, absolutely. My last comment, Mike, is, and the last time I called in, it was with all the returning injured guys pending. I said that night that my biggest concern was everybody assumed as soon as they got back into the lineup, they'd start hitting with pop, et cetera. You don't have the kind of injuries those guys had and come back and immediately be producers. And I think we've seen evidence of that, that, you know, time has been the biggest single factor in all this. And unfortunately, when you're in early to mid-August and then heading into September, time wasn't on the Jays' side in terms of that. So it was, I think it wasn't just the injuries. It was the timing of the injuries that probably hurt the cause as much as anything else.
Well, that's a fair point. And we did all hope that Lindon and Encarnacion and Laurie would be able to hit the ground running when they came back. They haven't, but they're not out of time yet. And we've seen this Blue Jay team capable of going on some really, really serious hot streaks. They're going to have to do it if they're going to make a run. But it's in them. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Blue Jays beat the New York Yankees 4-3. Derek Jeter goes 1-for-5 in his final game, regular season ever, at Rogers Center, which I believe makes him 2-for-13 for the series. And he hits a little humpback liner to second base with a tying run on third and two out in the ninth inning to end it and get the save to Casey Jansen. Taking your phone calls right up till 5 o'clock on Blue Jays Talk. Here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Mark is in Brampton. Hello, Mark.
Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask you about the Blue Jays and bunting.
Yes.
My impression, I've seen a few times, it drives me crazy, that times when they should bunt, they don't, and when they shouldn't, they do. I'll give you an example.
Please do.
If you have a man on third base, or especially bases loaded, and less than two outs, yep. I say bunt the ball towards first base. You're almost guaranteed to bring in the man from third.
You're really not.
And I see they don't do that.
Right.
I mean, zero outs, one out. I say bunt towards first, bring the man from third. It's a high probability you'll bring him home.
No, it's not.
I don't care.
Not as high as you think
first.
It is.
And other times, they bunt when I don't understand why they would. Like, nobody's on base. The only time I say bunt is when you can advance a runner. And so that drives me nuts, especially when there's, like, no outs, bases loaded, sluggers come up, and swing for the fences. And as we know, 7 out of 10 times you fail. Why not even a slugger, just bunt it toward first, bring the man from third? What do you think?
I think that you and I are completely opposite in the way we look at baseball. I'm not sure that we could be more polar opposite.
Okay.
You understand that with the bases loaded, there's a force at home plate, right?
Yeah.
So the chances of a bunt scoring a run are highly, highly lower.
Okay, let's just say a man on third, one man on third.
You like to squeeze, huh?
Yeah.
See, I don't like people to get out on purpose. That's my view of the game. You only get 27 outs. They're very precious. And I don't want to give any away. I want to give my guy a chance to hit every time.
Okay, I'll tell you one time it really drove me crazy.
Sure.
We're down by one. We have an opportunity to tie it. There's a man on third, less than two outs. You could almost guarantee at least tie the game.
You can. And this is, you got to stop right there.
Okay.
What do you think the probability of a bunt being successful from scoring a runner on third with less than two outs is?
I think it's pretty high.
Like what?
Over 50%?
That's not pretty high.
Well, okay.
Bad things can happen on a bunt. It's true. The teams can mishandle it. We saw the Blue Jays do that twice against the Red Sox back-to-back this week. You can have a throwing error. You can beat out a bunt. But generally, when you're asking a guy to sacrifice, you're saying, get yourself out and advance a runner. Now, there are lots of other ways that good things can happen if you let a guy swing the bat. You mm-hmm. said 70% of the time a hitter's going to fail to advance that runner, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're not, that's wrong. You know, you're saying that 30% of the time a guy gets a hit and 70% of the time a guy gets an out. First of all, that's wrong. Most guys have an on-base percentage over 300. You're forgetting about a walk, A, and two, you're forgetting about a productive out. And a fly ball, I would rather have a guy hit a fly ball to score a runner where he's actually trying to get a hit and do something good and get himself on base than to say, I'm going to get myself out and try to score this run. And the opposite is, the bunts that you don't like, I love. I love when guys bunt for hits. I think that's a fantastic weapon that people don't use nearly often enough.
Okay. I don't know. You know more about the game than I. I only started watching again about 5 years ago. But I just thought, well, I hear all the time we fail at bat 7 out of 10 times, which if you're hitting 300 is about right.
Well, but that's batting average, right? That's not about not getting out. That's
hits
over
walks at bats, and other
right?
things. I hear you.
And there are productive outs, too.
But, yeah, so, yeah, you know more about the game than me. Maybe I'll think about what you said and it won't drive me crazy in the future.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't drive you crazy because it shouldn't. The Blue Jays have 32 sacrifice bunts this year. And for me, that's about 30 too many.
Yeah, right.
I think we
see it differently. And unfortunately, also, the Jays, as we know, are not very good at bunting. So that probably,
yeah,
you know, that doesn't help either. But
that's very true.
You know, we're all entitled to our opinion, so fair enough.
Right. And you know what? I like that you're coming back to baseball, and I like that you're trying to learn more about it. Take a look. Do a little bit of research. And it's not it's not difficult at all to find people writing about what sacrifice bunts do and don't do and what they help and what they don't help.
Yeah.
And hopefully your eyes will be open to this.
Yeah, I value your knowledge. I really appreciate it. And I'm a second-time caller, by the way. I called last year one time. And if you have time for a quick update on Brett Laurie, I'd appreciate it if you could.
I don't have one.
No, is he out for the season, do you think?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so. But I would think no earlier than mid-September, though.
Yeah,
we're really not
we're just
hearing
hoping to see him again, that's all.
Yeah, it will be a much better ball club when he comes back. Thank you for the call, Mark. I appreciate it. And I know that a lot of people love bunting, and a lot of people think like that's active baseball. It's something you can do instead of just sending a guy up and hoping he gets a hit. But it really, it's not a winning strategy. There are very, 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 very few times when the bunt is in order in the American League. In the National League, with a pitcher who can't hit, you can bunt all the time. But in the American League, when most of the people you have in the lineup can hit, for me, really, the only time I'm bunting is in the ninth inning, first and second, nobody out, or second, nobody out, a weak hitter at the plate and a good hitter up behind him. That's the only time I'm bunting. That's it. I said tie game, right? Or down by a run. I don't want that. Tie the game. That's fine. But otherwise, I'm not going to gift my opponent with an out. Blue Jays beat the New York Yankees 4-3. Finish August 9-17, and the roof is closing, and school starts on Tuesday, and it feels like summer's over. None of that stuff is fun. But it is fun to see the Blue Jays take a series from the Yankees and hopefully build on that. They're going to need an incredible September to get back in it. George is in Thornhill. Hey, George.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
All right. Thank you.
You know, one of the things that I love about baseball is how Derek Jeter on Derek Jeter Day in Toronto is the last at-bat of the game. It's just unbelievable.
Pretty cool how it worked out, huh?
Yeah, but it seems like that seems to happen in baseball. You know, a guy makes a great play in the field, ends up being the first guy up. So often things like that happen. Maybe we just notice it more because it's so much of a one-on-one game.
I think that's exactly it. We notice it more. There is an 11.1% chance that the guy who makes a great defensive play to end the inning will be the leadoff man the next inning. It does feel like it happens a lot more than that, but there are a lot of times where it doesn't happen and it doesn't go in our memory banks. But it was awfully cool, and it took like that little duck snort nothing from Jacoby Ellsbury to drop in between three fielders to get Jeter up to end the game.
Yeah, it was actually nice to see Casey. That was the best I've seen him look since the Dominican, I think. He hasn't been the same since he went away that time. But what I want to talk about is this whole wild card standing thing.
Sure.
And you know, I've been the guy all year that's been saying to my friends, I'm staying positive the whole year long. And I have to tell you, I actually tweeted you on Friday night. I said, as much as I want to hate this team, I just can't. Because even when they lose, they just don't give up. They keep coming back. Like those losses to the Red Sox, they come back and tie the game and lose. But they still come back. They're so resilient. I love this team. I really do. I'm not crazy about Gibbons and a lot of the moves he makes, but I love the team overall. But about
what moves don't you like? That hurts me because I think John Gibbons is a phenomenal tactical manager.
You really like Gibbons and you like the way he uses the bullpen and such.
Yeah.
But I think Gibbons' one negative is he likes the players and cares about the players too much. And Burley, the example, the last two times he was up, after he walked that guy and had two on with nobody out, that's when you got to pull him. Because I know he had six great innings, and I was so happy for him. The guy has not beaten the Yankees in 10 years. Take him out with a 1-0 lead. Give him a shot. I don't mean at the beginning of the inning, but there, it's like, it's got to be playing in your head. It has to be going on. I haven't beaten these guys. Here we go again. Here we go again. He walks the guy at him 0-2. He walks him on the next four pitches. You take him out, and you go right then to loop. That's my opinion, but you know what? I'm probably going to be as wrong as he is. But just, you know, sometimes he drives me nuts. But what I want to say about the wild card, Mike, is this. Kansas City, Cleveland, Detroit, the Yankees and Seattle, the teams in front of us right now.
Right, Detroit, but Kansas City and Detroit only count as one team.
Right, that's fine. But having said that, one of those is going to lose because they're playing each other six times. Cleveland and the Tigers play each other seven times. Cleveland and Kansas City play each other four times. The Yankees and the Royals play each other three times. And from what I remember, Seattle plays the Angels and Oakland something like 10 times, two of the top teams who are in front of them. So, and then we play the Yankees four times, and we play Seattle four times. If we start to play decent baseball, and I'm not talking about 25 or 22-5 or whatever, you know, that we would have to do probably to have no chance of not making it. But if we play 600 baseball and win at the right time, we could have a very decent chance at this wild card.
I don't know that at any point, I don't know that there's any scenario that we can sit here right now and say that they have a pretty decent chance at the wild card. But I see what you're saying. The other team's going to be beating each other up. And some people see that as bad, that somebody's going to be winning. Somebody that you're chasing is going to be winning every night. but it's also the truth that somebody you're chasing is going to be losing a lot of the time. And if they go 22-4 and then have 91 wins, they're going to be in the playoffs. That's for sure.
Yeah, they are. That's for sure. Yes.
But what the thing is for me, George, is because I don't want to get caught up in the math. I've tried to plot out this is this and this is what's going to happen to that and that's what and it's just it's completely futile. If the Blue Jays win a bunch of ball games, they're giving themselves a good chance. But it has to be a bunch of ball games. I mean, they've got to go. Well, they went 9-17 in August. If they go 17-9 in September, they're giving themselves a shot. Not a good shot, but a shot. They probably have to be a lot better than that.
Yeah, but the other thing, though, if you take a look, since Encarnacion came back, obviously it takes a number of days before you start feeling comfortable at the plate. But I don't think it's any coincidence that Bautista hits 5 home runs in 5 consecutive days when he's got Edwin backing him up. Whether it's 1 behind or 2 behind, he's back there, and they know they can't pitch around him like they used to.
Well, they could certainly pitch around him a lot. It's true when Juan Francisco was hitting behind him. So there may be something to that. 5 home runs in 5 games is pretty special. And it's great to see that Bautista's heating up. And it was great to see Edwin go deep behind him as well. And if he starts to heat up as well, then the Blue Jays can do some major, major, major damage. Thank you, George. Appreciate
the
call.
Mike, have a great evening.
Thank you very much. And we'll take more of your calls. And we'll hear from John Gibbons. And it'll be all kinds of fun. We got a half hour Blue Jays talk left. It is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Blue Jays still down a pair. 2-1 to Bautista's crush. Left center field and deep. Is it 5 in a row? Yes! A 5th straight game with a home run for Jose Bautista. His 29th. And the Blue Jays are down 1, trailing 3-2. That was very Hawk Harrelson-y of me, and I apologize for that. The yes was about the 5 games with 5 home runs, not about the fact that the Blue Jays had scored a run. But that was a big home run for Jose Bautista going back-to-back with Melky Cabrera. And the Blue Jays wound up beating the New York Yankees 4-3. Edwin Encarnacion went deep as well in the 7th. And then Deonor Navarro walked. Steve Tolleson ran for him and stole second and scored on a ground single right field by Munenori Kawasaki. Just a fantastic slide by Tolleson, daring Carlos Beltran to throw him out. Beltran's done a lot of DHing this year, hasn't played a lot of outfield, and the Blue Jays catch a huge break with Ichiro Suzuki not being in right field at that point. I don't think Tolleson gets the wave if that's the case. Blue Jays, on Derek Jeter's farewell, beat the New York Yankees 4-3. I'm Mike Wilner, and we are Blue Jays talking it up to the top of the hour. We'll hear from John Gibbons in a second, but first, Dennis is in Mississauga. Hello, Dennis.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing all right, thank you.
That's good. Listen, I just wanted to – I'm not going to do the big debate about the your philosophy on the bunt, although I disagree a lot with you.
Why, though? Tell me why.
Well, there is a play. To me, there is a place for it in the game. One of the things that I don't think is recognized or talked about much – baseball is a game of trends and things that happen over periods of time. A team gets hot, like the month of May. A team gets cold.
Right.
Player gets hot or cold. A lineup gets hot and cold. And so when that lineup gets cold, like which has been the case over the last month, you know, that it's that old, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and getting the same result, right?
Yeah,
so
like bunting.
I look at them and I've watched them over the last month and they go to the plate. Second and third, nobody out. Second and third, one out. And, you know, there's been so many times when, you know, you get the Jose Reyes first pitch pop-up. You get the big strikeout for Juan Francisco. You get this thing. And for me, the part that makes my head want to explode is for professional ball players to not be better situational hitters. And that's frustrating as heck.
Well, I get the frustration. I really do. I fully dismiss your – there have been so many Jose Reyes first pitch pop-ups, though. I had a discussion about that with someone on the Twitter was it Friday or yesterday when he popped up on the first pitch with a chance to score a run? And somebody, oh, he does that all the time. Why is he swinging at the first pitch? And I'll tell you, like I told him, I'll tell you this. When Jose Reyes puts the first pitch in play this year, he's hitting .463. So for Jose Reyes to swing at the first pitch, if he likes it and put it in play, that's an exceedingly good thing for the Blue Jays. As far as the whole definition of insanity thing, I, for the life of me, will never understand why, when a lineup is struggling, when a team is just not getting hits, not scoring runs, not doing anything offensively, why it's then that you want to give away extra outs. That, you know, they're even more important when you're not scoring any runs, aren't they?
Well, there's different times where an out is not necessarily a giveaway. And I think last week, the game when we're up 2-0, and by the way, I'm not a hater. I'm a huge Jays fan.
No, and I appreciate that. You don't sound like a hater, but, when you're telling a guy, bunt this runner over, you're telling him, get yourself out. We'll pick up 90 feet. And when a team is struggling to score, you need your outs even more than when you're not.
Right, but when we were last week, we were up 2-0 in a game. Runners are second and third, nobody out. And I think it might have been Pilar. I'm not sure who was up.
I will look it up for you.
Yeah, second and third, nobody out. For me, I would squeeze, because you advance the runner from second to third. You still have somebody in scoring position. You've had trouble scoring runs. You're up 2-0. That insurance run is huge. But that is so far out of the realm of what John Gibbons would do.
Right, and rightly
because,
so.
I don't know. What that
second
might.
And third, nobody out. The last time, and you may not be referring to this situation, but I'm looking back. The last time I see second and third, nobody out was second game against Boston. So it'll be Tuesday night. And it was second and third, nobody out, and Melky Cabrera at the plate. And
right.
Cabrera hit a ground ball to shortstop and scored the run. So, I'd rather have, and I'll keep looking. It wasn't Pilar because he wasn't up, but I'll keep looking for the thing that you're talking about.
Well, Valencia was in the same kind of situation. There may have been one out.
Right, and Danny Valencia has never had a sacrifice bunt in his career.
Well, no, I'm not talking about the bunt thing. In that case, I'm talking about him getting up there and flailing away at a pitch as well off the plate, taking the big swing, and striking out ultimately, right?
Yeah, Valencia's not a home run hitter, so I don't think you can say that he goes up there looking to hit home runs. But I also, I'll say this about situational hitting. If it was possible for a player to adjust the way he hits in those sorts of situations, wouldn't there be a player who over the course of a major league career was actually a much better hitter with runners in scoring position than the rest of the time? The fact that there isn't tells me that they can't do anything about that.
Right? But I know, I don't have the number in front of me, but I know even in coaching, and I coached a lead 18 and under, and you can teach, there's no excuse to not be able to bunt. You can teach bunting.
I agree with you completely.
That's laziness.
Yes.
And to put a ball in play by just beating one on the ground with, if you're trying to advance a runner to third, go to the right side, that's a practiced learning thing. And guys, just don't want to do that.
Maybe for kids. I don't think it's possible at the professional level. I've seen too many times, and you got to give pitchers a credit too. They are really, really good. Everybody knows when a guy's in that situation with a runner in scoring position, he's doing his best to advance the runner, and it's not something that can be done nearly as easily as you think. And there are guys who come up and swing for the fences and don't care, and they're not going to take what the defense is giving them, but I think those guys are a lot fewer and far between than the guys who are trying to move runners along and just, they get beat. The pitcher beats them.
There's outstanding pitching, there's no doubt. But again, they're supposed to be facing outstanding hitters, right?
They are.
It seems somehow it's an acquired skill to be able to move runners and advance to the right side of the diamond and to lay down bunts. That I think, again, is a laziness thing that guys don't want to spend the time, because it's not nearly as sexy and sizzly as banging a ball off the fence, right?
You're right, and I agree with you on bunting. Guys, do not spend nearly enough time trying to perfect it, because it is, that bunting is an acquirable skill, and it's something that can be mastered. And it's just about the only thing on the offensive side of baseball that can be mastered. And not enough people try hard enough to do it. But, again, and I want to get to Gibby and I want to get some more callers. I'll just say this. If it was possible to change your game for the situation, we would see guys who consistently became different hitters with runners in scoring position, became better hitters with runners in scoring position, and that just simply doesn't happen. And it just doesn't happen. You get your hits when you get your hits. And that's all you can do. Appreciate the call. Let's go to John Gibbons. Hear what he had to say as the Blue Jays get up off the mat, beat the New York Yankees 4-3 to close out a 4-5 homestand in a 9-17 August.
John, does that remind you of the good old days when you used to win games with home runs?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, hey, they win. You know, it's guaranteed runs. I think where you get into trouble, though, when you start swinging for them, you're trying to hit them, you know. But you get a good at bat and you get a pitch that you can hit out that's elevated a little bit, and you elevate the ball yourself, you know, because we got so many guys that are so strong anyway. And it's a good home run hitting park. It's a good home run hitting division. So that's kind of what we do. Now, you know, you still have to get your other hits, but that we've been missing that.
Gibby. Hap really pitched out of a bunch of different jams, stranded a whole bunch of guys in scoring position today. You had it like that.
Yeah, he was really good. You know, of course, he gave up the leadoff homer, and then Cervelli's base hit, and then the other guy scored on an error. But, you know, I thought his breaking ball today was as good as we've seen it, and that's really helped him lately when he's been pitching well. But I thought it was really good today. And, yeah, I mean, he anytime you see a leadoff home run, you're always in the back of your mind, uh-oh, you know. And then when they followed up with Jeter's hit, it's got a chance to be a big, big inning. But then he got the ground ball double play and, you know, put an end to that. So, but I thought he was really, really good today. He just ran out of gas there after the seventh inning. And then, of course, Cecil came in, went right through the middle of their lineup. And then Casey was good, you know. So, no controversy for those who thought there was.
When Jeter came up in the final at bat, do you think that was the baseball gods playing part of that?
No, because usually the baseball gods are on his side. He's, you know, how many times has he, you know, that did enter my mind out there thinking, you know what, you know, when Ellsbury, you know, dunked that ball in, you figure, you know what, Jeter's going to come up, and so many times he's done something clutch, and this would be possibly his last bat here, and if he, you know, unless he ties it there, but he's been known to do so many of those things, he didn't feel good. And then when he came off the, you know, the bat, I thought for a minute there it was going to be over his head at second. So, but, you know, I thought the Toronto fans and everybody was great to him. And, you know, he deserved every bit of it.
John, we've been asking about Batista seemingly every day, so I'm not sure what there is left to say. But what can you say about the type of run that he's on right now?
Well, I mean, that's so hard to do what he's doing. But, you know, he's in a nice little groove. You know, I think he's waiting his at bats out for a pitch to hit, you know, and he's in. I mean, he's using that left center field gap pretty good. That shows that he's on the ball. He's not spinning off, and that's where he runs into trouble. So, but he's a good hitter. That, you know, I mean, it's tough to hit five in a row, but you know, he's a guy that could do that.
He is, and he and Caleb Joseph of the Baltimore Orioles are the only guys who have done that this year. Jose Cruz has the Blue Jays club record, a home run in six straight games, and Jose Bautista's got a chance to tie that on Tuesday when the Blue Jays open up their series in Tampa Bay, looking for their first series win at the Rays since April of 2007. I'm Mike Wilner. We're Blue Jays talking it up. Right up until 5 o'clock when Roger Lajoie takes over for Sportsnet tonight. Brandon Morrow is going to pitch an inning of relief for the Buffalo Bisons tomorrow in a game that you can hear on Sportsnet 590 The Fan starting at 2 o'clock. The Bisons against the Syracuse Chiefs, their last game of the season, and they hope that it matters. Let's take a look and see if it will. The Bisons were a game and a half back of the wild card going into today. They play tonight. They are trailing the Pawtucket Red Sox and are now a game back. Does that mean Pawtucket lost today? Let's take a look, Internet, see if you can tell us what's going on. The Pawtucket Red Sox don't play until tonight. They play Rochester. And again, they're a game up with two games to go. So unless Pawtucket wins and Buffalo loses tonight, tomorrow is going to be a pretty big game. So the Bisons here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan with Ben Wagner. And again, you'll get an inning out of Brandon Morrow in that game. And then Brandon Morrow will probably be activated off the 60-day disabled list. Back with the Blue Jays September 2nd with some other September call-ups that will include Ryan Goins and Anthony Gose, maybe Daniel Norris, maybe George Kateris, Rob Rasmussen, Steve Delabar. There are a lot of people who the Blue Jays could call up, and one hopes that they're not shy about September call-ups. The Blue Jays need some help. They're not out of a race. They need to win some games, and they could add. And just looking at the 40-man roster right now, they could add Steve Delabar. They could add Kyle Drabek, Sean Nolan, Rob Rasmussen. They will put Neil Wagner on the 60-day disabled list to take Brandon Morrow off the 60-day disabled list, but they'll need to make room, too, to get George Kateris up here because he's not on the 40-man roster. Dan Johnson will likely be activated from the disabled list and join the Blue Jays. Anthony Gose, Ryan Goins, maybe even Darren Mastriani to give you a pair of legs off the bench and another bat. I would love to see 9 or 10 September call-ups. I just don't remember the last time we did that around here. More of your phone calls. Steve is in Ancaster. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
All right. Thank you.
Oh, good. I was just going to – I want to touch on something quickly before the Jeter. I was going to say I sort of disagree. I do think there – I'm not a stats person exactly. I don't know statistically, but I'm sure there are players over their career that have a much higher postseason record. Getting to Jeter, actually, he has, I think, a 40-point higher average in playoffs than in the regular season. So that's over a long haul. I remember
He doesn't.
Pardon?
He doesn't. His career batting average in the postseason is worse than it is in the regular season. Not significantly. It's about the same.
I heard he holds the all-time batting average for a postseason.
No.
At 350.
I think he may have the most hits in the postseason.
Well, that's what I was getting to.
But that's more about opportunity than anything else.
The thing is, Gibby just mentioned, you know, I was worried because the chances that Jeter came through in the clutch. So I honestly think in baseball, I think the players and the managers feel that there are clutch players.
Oh, I'm sure they feel that there are clutch players, and they're wrong. And it's okay for them to feel that there are clutch players because that's part of the, you know, the magic and whatever of the game. Derek Jeter, I'll tell you right now, and it is an impressive thing to be able to maintain your regular numbers in the postseason because you're facing good pitching almost all the time, and your overall numbers should drop because the pitching is so much better.
But team, yeah.
Derek Jeter, for his career, is a .310 hitter with an .819 OPS.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? With runners in scoring position, he's a career .301 hitter with an .808 OPS.
Oh.
He's the same guy. With two out and runners in scoring position, he's a career .299 with an .817 OPS. Late and close, .284, .779 OPS.
Oh, yeah, it's pretty close.
He's the same guy every time. He doesn't elevate his game, but it certainly doesn't drop off.
Yeah. Well, maybe you remember all the big moments, too, right?
Of course, sure.
Now, the other thing is, I respect your view on the game. That's why I was a little bit surprised when I heard yesterday, I couldn't get through, you said, I didn't know what you meant by there's a miss of Derek Jeter. And the other thing is, today I heard you say he's not one of the top infielders you've ever seen. And just on stats alone, like I understand fielding-wise you could say that.
For
but
sure.
Stats alone in hitting, I don't see how the I was just flipping through his numbers and they're pretty jaw-dropping. He's really like all-time leaders, never mind just in the Yankee categories, but in baseball. And I just don't know who you would see as being better than him. You know, his lifetime, he's the all-time hits leader for shortstop. So that alone must tell you something. Now, I don't understand why he has five gold gloves.
Me neither. He shouldn't have any.
I don't think of him as a Gold Glove winner.
He has five Gold Gloves because he's a New York Yankee.
Oh, okay. So it's more of a popularity. Well, the other thing is, though, he's got the all-time hits, 200 hits, and he's one of only six players to have 200 or more hits in eight seasons. And
yep.
Only, I think it said Pete Rose and Ichiro Suzuki were the only guys to have
more. Yeah, he's got almost 3,500 hits. It's a phenomenal accomplishment.
So I'm just getting back to the point, what I must have missed when you were talking about that he's not one of the best I think you said the best players, infielders you've seen ever or something.
Yeah, well, he's certainly not. I mean, as far as shortstops go.
So you were
Well, like I said earlier in the show, if you want a guy to come up and hit you a single, Derek Jeter is a pretty good guy to do that.
Okay.
He will foul off a bunch of pitches. He gives you a great at-bat. He's an extraordinarily high percentage base stealer that he doesn't get nearly enough credit for.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, this takes me back like 15 years when I worked up the dial at our sister station, 680 News, and I used to have debates with one of the business guys all the time, who's a better hitter, Tony Gwynn or Frank Thomas? And my answer was, in a heartbeat, Frank Thomas, absolutely no question.
Oh, well.
And he would say, well, Tony Gwynn's got seven batting titles, and Tony Gwynn's got a career 330 batting average or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's even higher than that. And Tony Gwynn's one of the greatest pure hitters ever. And my contention is that Frank Thomas or, you know, Barry Bonds or Alex Rodriguez or whatever gets out less and hits for more power. So that's what I want. And Derek Jeter, again, Tony Gwynn, you need a guy to get you a single? You call Tony Gwynn. May he rest in peace. But I want more from a hitter than that. I want a guy who's going to walk. I want a guy who's going to hit for power. I want a guy who's a real threat to do something big every time he steps up.
Yeah.
I'll take Jose Bautista over Derek Jeter any day of the week at the plate.
Oh, like right now, you mean?
Well, or...
Not over... If you could have them, though, for their whole career...
Well, yeah, Bautista started slow, and he wasn't very good for a long time. But I'll take the last 5 years of Jose Bautista over any 5 years of Derek.
Well, the other problem, though, is when you say A-Rod, I really think he being so juiced up, I don't see how you can compare them fairly, because I look at a guy like Brady Anderson, who goes from, like, 12 homers to 50, and I understand... You know, this is like, I don't know if it's horse strength or what they're putting in them, but I just can never fully look at those players and understand, like a Palmeiro. He had no homers with the Cubs, and that whole Texas team that Canseco was on, they were hitting things out left and right.
100%.
Pedro Rodriguez got huge, Ruben Sierra, and I can never fully understand what their true stats would have been. So I can't really list them as all-time greats.
Okay, but that's...
Whereas Jeter, as far as I know, has never been
as
even
far as you know. And my contention is we can't know about anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so as far as I'm concerned, they're all the same. And whether they were putting horse steroids in their butts or whether they weren't, the playing field was pretty level. I'm not sitting here and saying Derek Jeter did steroids, and I know that I'm going to get 1,000 tweets that are saying that I am. I am not saying that. What I'm saying is we don't know about anybody, and there are so many guys who are dirty and got away with it and are being held up as clean, clean, clean. Zero clue, and it's naive of us to think otherwise.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Again, I'll always take the guys who don't get out and who hit for power over the spray singles hitters, always. Blue Jays beat the Yankees 4-3. We got time for one more. Michael is in Markham. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Mike. I was going to go on a different tangent, but I thought I'd end it off with my opinion on Jeter.
Sure.
I think it's pretty obvious to anybody who follows you, and I do, and I respect your opinion, and, you know, people can like the guy, and they don't need a reason. They just like him, you know?
Sure.
That's fine. And it's pretty obvious that you think less of Jeter than pretty much everybody, and I just think this was the weekend that you should have kept that in your back pocket.
I think that's ridiculous. And you know what? Somebody else called yesterday and says, obviously you don't like Derek Jeter. Anyone's listening to you says you don't like Derek Jeter. Every time I talk about Derek Jeter, I talk about the fact that...
everybody.
What?
I think you are on record as having a lower opinion of Derek Jeter than pretty much everybody. And
well,
then
you're in... You should probably seek treatment, Michael.
Okay, who thinks less of him than you do?
I have no idea. I don't care. Yeah. I would vote for Derek Jeter for the Hall of Fame if I had a vote. To me, that means a heck of a lot. There are not a lot of people who I would vote for to put in the Hall of Fame. Derek Jeter is one of them.
Like I say, your opinion of him is lower than most people.
Yeah, maybe. But I don't, because I don't buy into the mythology and the magic and all the...
That's fine. You're entitled to that opinion. But okay. I just think this was a weekend for the people who loved him. And if I was you, I would have just, you know, let people... You compliment him and praise him and say what they want about him and leave your opinions aside. You were raining on some people's parade. That's
well,
just my comment.
That's fair. I'm very glad that you're not me. I'll say that. And I'll also say that people who love Derek Jeter are more than entitled to love Derek Jeter. But because it's his last weekend in Toronto, doesn't mean that I should sit here and say, yes, Derek Jeter is one of the greatest shortstops of all time and all that stuff. I'm not going to say stuff that I don't believe. Tomorrow's off. See you Tuesday.